previously in part two.
3,000 miles in 44 days and 1 hour.
Ideally, I wanted 2 summers in it, but only ended up with 2 months in it. Every stroke felt like 150 kg deadlift.
I'm really curious as to where this obsession with winning comes from. Have you always been like that, or is it mum and dad?
Yeah, no, not really. I have no idea.
From as long as you remember, you can remember always wanting to win everything you did.
Everything, yeah. Yeah. And also, it's funny, like there's a great book called Mindset by Carol Dweck. Really good book.
Yeah.
And it talks about the fixed versus growth mindset. So fixed is I'm not good at English. Like growing up, I was not good at English. Therefore, I had a very fixed mindset through school, mm-hmm. thinking, I'm not good at English. What's the point of me even trying? Therefore, I'm never going to be good at English because that is what it is. And also, I went through school getting being proud of myself for getting like E for effort, 1 for attainment in like the subjects that I love. And I was like, therefore, I am good at maths and chemistry and physics. And therefore, no point do I put any effort in because I'm already good.
Yeah.
And I think like that, in hindsight, I would much prefer to have a bit more of a growth mindset growing up. And so like worked a little bit on that like philosophy piece of like, I'm not good at English. And then you just suffix it with yet.
Okay.
Like I can't play the piano. No, yet. You can't play the piano yet.
Where was that shift?
Probably during the whole process of the row, right?
Really? Like, okay.
Yeah, as late as that. And so I think also if you have a fixed mindset, attainment is everything.
Okay.
And therefore, like my obsession from winning probably comes like as a like I am nothing without that attainment.
Okay.
Like that one for achievement or that winning that match. And so, because I valued effort less growing up, I've probably therefore valued coming second less.
Okay. Yeah. No. I get
and
that.
So
I get that.
Not it's the taking part that counts, because obviously I still don't like taking part that counts. But at the same time, it is like trying to like sit and be more aware and conscious of the effort and rather than the full attainment.
And enjoying the process.
And enjoying the process. Yeah. And I think that's something that's been quite a rude awakening, having come second in something that I probably will never do. Well, definitely never do again solo, and never being able to like redeem myself. And I think that looking at test cricketers, for example, have a very high depression rate, and I think it's probably because they're like their chance of redemption is so low.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing cricket, you get out for a duck, you've got to wait,
sit and watch everyone else.
Whereas if you like catch the ball in rugby and you knock it on,
there's a chance.
There's next time you're gonna, like, next when you're like, I'm gonna make a massive impact in 30 seconds time. That's the true. Next ball I get. So I think where that chance for redemption is lacking, it's where there's like a huge like opportunity for depression to seep in. And so therefore like reframing and using different metrics of success, like I love the sort of analogy of absolute success versus relative success. Like crossing the Atlantic is absolutely successful, the relative success compared to the people in my race. I came second, so therefore it's a failure relative to what I wanted to do, but actually absolutely it's a success.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
That's awesome. You said that was probably your biggest. Was that your biggest lesson you learned about yourself during the row? Was that?
I would merge the row with all the preparation for the row as well. And so, like the journey that 3 years has been, I think that growth mindset, fixed mindset piece is
molded you into who you are today. Did that give you a ton of purpose? Not just the wave wrangler stuff, but also for yourself, knowing stopping rugby. You know, rugby's your identity in a way. Rugby was my identity. Rugby was, still is your identity. Wow. And it's, I don't think people understand, like, it's a sport, but it's such a powerful thing. Like, it's your friends, it's your family, it's your community of people. Did you feel like that row gave you that sort of purpose again? And then also the social purpose with a charity to help other people.
Yeah,
too.
And I actually think my discovery of all these different tool sets and being able to, and hopefully being able to communicate some of those to people, like I thought on the row that I'm going to write a book about all the like tools that I used, and like
you should,
and so long story. But so for example, I work in a family business with my dad, and I said to him, right, I'm going to take every Friday off to write a book, And he's like, okay. So like, brush down the rug. Every Friday, organize a meeting. Like, so I'm like, okay. And then I was like, I'm going. He's like, oh, on this Friday, how important? And he's like, oh, whatever's more important to you. And I'm like,
oh, that's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, don't leave me with that question.
Yeah. And I'm like, well.
Smart.
It's, well, yeah, it's not. Smart. It's not smart. It's just manipulative. It's manipulative. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, what is more important to my mental health? Whether that book ever gets published, mm-hmm. it's essentially all the tools that I have used, as well as that identity piece, to like write to my 25-year-old self who.
Or the five-year-old who.
Yeah, or the five. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And, and to sort of use these tools as to like how you can consciously live a bit better rather than just. When you say your identity is this, you're already like putting an identity on yourself or Joe or me, when actually the values around what we all enjoy about rugby are so different. Like, if you, it also like allows more people into that sport as well. So like, let's say they see us three rugby player, we're pretty much at like, we could be out of the same mold. Right, and that therefore just says, oh, that's what a rugby player is. That
cookie cutter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, like, oh, I can't play rugby because
I'm not
this.
Yeah.
I am not. I don't like going out for beers on a Saturday evening, or like I don't want to be the rugby player that the social norm pictures, and therefore I don't want to play a sport that is what's associated with it. Whereas if the identity of rugby player is very diverse, or we like all, and it's obviously impossible, but all identify as our values and our thoughts and motivations, it's far more open to people coming in who share those values rather than what society sort of dictates should be a rugby player.
It's true. Yeah, I love
how important do you think is having a purpose, as well as like identity side we've discussed, but actually having a purpose and something to pursue, how important do you think that is in life?
Yeah, it's really weird because I didn't think that I'd have like the arrival blues, you know, where so you get to a destination and you're like, it's not as great as I thought it was going to be. So like the row is finished.
What now?
And the number of people have asked me like, what's now? What's my purpose? It's like, I do think that it is labelling that purpose. And I love the concept of Ikigai, and it has been kind of westernized to some extent with a Venn diagram, of course, with the idea of something you love, something you're good at, something that the world needs, and something you can get paid for, and that sort of rolls into other theories of motivation and purpose as well. But the idea that if you can tick all those boxes, like you want to do something you love, obviously that's like playful. If you enjoy what you do for work, you never work a day in your life kind of vibe. Something that the world needs, you feel rewarded for doing that job. So if you just love it, but no one needs it, you're like, well,
what's the point in
doing it? And that you feel a bit like vacuous. Obviously you need to get paid for it because economical pressure, like we need to live and pay the bills. Like, sadly, that is
there's no choice.
And then something that you're good at, because if that you comes into the enjoyment piece as well, because if you're not good at it, you just feel a bit hopeless. And then if any one of those things is missing, you can replace it with something that might not be that thing. So like, you're doing a day job and then running a podcast on the side. The podcast fills a few of those pieces. Like, the world needs people to have these kind of conversations.
Massively.
Might not get paid for it very well, but we need to like have those conversations. Yeah, that's the day job. And so understanding why you do each piece of your the rich tapestry that is your day to day and your week has to fill different places. So like the day job, or like earning cash is obviously important, and you might just do the day job just for that. But if you can fill the other three things in your spare time, then
you're going a long way.
Success, and it drives purpose.
And how's your, I say, well being, mental health been since the race itself? Has it been sort of back to the norm and okay, or
no, being bad? Like, I have felt, as I said, I felt lonely at times. Like, I split up with my fiance of 12 years in the July before the row, so I came home to empty house.
That's hard.
It was really hard.
Was it 2022? Sorry,
no, 2023. So like, 9 months ago, 10 months ago. So coming home to an empty house, and I said that lonely piece of like, I don't want to bother anyone, like to go for a coffee on a Saturday or whatever, which is where like going to that discipline of going to CrossFit classes so important. And like I know what is missing. I therefore needed to just be really proactive into like what to build up a support network for myself that allows me to not be so depressed. Like I've had like mates over every Wednesday for like steak and wine night, and then that's like I'm able to share stuff I love, which is cooking steak, like local produce from Dorking Butchery.
That sounds good.
And like wine, and so like I love sharing like my passion with people, and so therefore organizing a couple of those, for example.
I love that. So do you find that those boxes that you were looking to tick earlier, do you feel like they are there at the minute? Do you think they're more so than they were maybe a couple of months ago?
Yeah, I think my autonomy is lacking at the moment, sort of working in the wine business, just trying to work out what the next thing is and what I really want to be doing. And actually the thing I've now started to love is this whole motivation. It's not motivational, but like
it is though.
I love this piece of analyzing what tools I used over the last 3 years to get to this point in time, and the idea of being able to share that is really, I'm quite looking forward to being able to share that.
Yeah,
it's just how I share it and what sort of journey I go on to say, if I write a book, how do I make that wash its face, for example. How do I develop what's important, and obviously fitness comes into it as well. I think there's a big crossover between mental fitness and physical fitness. Massive. And the idea of potentially helping people in both areas with their motivation to be healthy rather than fit, even like that time when I had my heart rate was going 220 beats a minute for 5 hours, had I had any like blockings of arteries or like or weakness in arteries, etc., I would be dead.
Yeah.
And it was only because I was healthy and fit that this unknown arrhythmia had didn't kill me. And so the idea of keeping healthy is, and helping people sort of stay in that bracket.
Amazing.
I love it. What are your sort of aspirations going forward now? Obviously we've talked about loads of stuff, but if there was one sort of goal in sight long term, do you have one, or you just sort of take it day by day and figuring out a plan as you go at the moment?
Day by day. And the idea of I'm saying it now because what's the first rule of doing a big challenge? Starting is it. Tell everyone.
Yeah.
because you become like accountable to like, now you're going to be like, next time it. You see me, that. You're like, Elliot, have you started your book yet? and because you can be held accountable to someone, other people. If you know that, some people are incredibly intrinsically motivated and I wish I could be that person, but I needed a PT for the road because I know my way around the gym, but I needed him to be like chasing me, like, have you done this? I would have just done the stuff I like rather than the like boring pranks, really good point. For example.
It's a really good point.
I know I'm not intrinsically motivated to do stuff, so I needed to be held accountable to him. And so, if you're going to do something, tell everyone about it, and therefore you can't back it. It feels embarrassing. Yeah,
it's spot on. And I would buy the book, by the way, can I just say? I'll definitely buy it. Get on it.
Head down and start writing.
This afternoon.
Every Friday. Yeah.
Back in the car.
I like to end it on this. And we always ask this question, but if there's one piece of advice you've learned or been given over your life that you'd like to share with the viewers and listeners that sort of changed your life, could have molded the direction you've gone in, what piece of advice would that be?
Wow, there's so much. I think it would be the a mindset. Oh, one of my favourite quotes for the entire row is, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right. And that like flick in like binary mindset of the number of people who said, I can't row the Atlantic. I've just seen you row the Atlantic. I couldn't do that. I'm like, yeah, you couldn't. If you carry on thinking like that, if you then switch your mindset suddenly to, I can do this, you probably can. And so I think finding ways and methods and tools to flick your mindset from can't to can, and that sounds so easy, but I used a number of different tools like that, analysis of purpose through Ikigai, analysis of motivation through self-determination theory. They are pieces of like tools, that self-help pieces, basically, that if you find them that relate to you, you should be able to like change your mindset to, I think I can do this. And then that sort of growth mindset versus fix, it's I can't do this yet.
Yeah.
And therefore sort of changing that mindset. And it's just that, like, can't to can obviously sounds easy, but it is literally just that. And then once you can, you start generating feelings towards the can, and like that manifest piece is like, I can do this. Therefore you start resonating an energy that allows people to like get on board with your can, and therefore sort of starts to help you. I think there was a great saying, like, if you saw someone on the side of the road sitting in their car and they're broken down, has a warning lights on, but they're sitting in the car in the middle of the motorway, and if they're sitting in the car, you're not going to get out and help them push. But if they're pushing their own car, you're going to stop and help them push. Yeah. And that same thing is like, I can do this, and therefore everyone else is going to start helping you, and that sort of energy that you are generating allows you to start and do, basically.
Mate, that's huge.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
What an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
That's really nice.